Okay, good morning, everyone. So I guess I'll start with a welcome. Over the last couple of years, we have been learning Sefer Tehillim, and for a variety of reasons, which maybe we'll get into a little bit today, we're going to try to take a little bit of a stab at Perek Shira, which is, as we're going to see, an incredibly beautiful, yet somewhat esoteric, we'll call it Medrash, because that in reality is what Perek Shira is. And although you'll see that much of Perek Shira is rooted in Psukim, which are gleaned from Sefer Tehillim. So in fact, we'll end up seeing that there's an incredible overlap between our Limud and Tehillim, that which we've learned, as well as Nukah Pitlach, and kind of bringing it all together into Perek Shira. So this class is sponsored by Abba Zev and Yaffa Hill as a schus for Refuah, for Arli Basara, and for incredible Simcha and Bracha for both of their families. We thank this Mishpacha for this sponsorship. So let's begin. What I'd like to do today is focus on the Hakdama. Now, I'm going to a little bit of I guess, what's the right word? Admission or honesty. This is the first time I'm ever learning Perek Shira. Schatani maskilachem hayom. I've read it through a couple of times, but the truth is, never actually learned Perek Shira in depth, which is why I'll tell you the genesis of this. The genesis of this is someone came to ask me a question on Perek Shira. And I said to the person, I'm going to be honest with you, this is the first time anyone has ever asked me a shayla on Perek Shira. And I'm going to be further honest on you, I don't know anything about Perek Shira, besides having read through it again, one time, two times, a few times. I remember when my kids were little, Arts Girl came out with a beautiful children's Perek Shira. Now, who decided to make a children's project out of Perek Shira when adults don't know what Perek Shira is talking about was interesting. But again, it's because of the animals and because of nature and because of all the beauty associated with it. So there's also clearly, as someone just mentioned to me walking in, the Perek Shira has become much more popular in the last couple of years. I think if you went back 10, 15, 20 years, there were a handful of people who were speaking about Perek Shira. Now, clearly, there are seats, by the way, if anyone needs, there are seats over here. There are seats up front. And there's another chair over here. So I'd like to really focus on this a little bit, because we'll talk about a little bit of the newfound popularity of Perek Shira, which in general is part of a newfound popularity regarding things which are a bit more esoteric, more Kabbalistic in nature, the revival certainly of Hasidus, even in non-Hasidic communities, all gives rise to this emphasis or to this reorientation on certain texts, which to a certain degree not have been ignored, but have not really been as primary because of their more esoteric nature. So what I'd like to try to do today is focus a little bit on the Hakdama, focus a little bit on the introduction. Because remember, this is true in any great literary work. If you ever, you know, people often skip introductions in order to get to like the meat of the story or the meat of the literary work. But the truth is, introductions are exceptionally important. Because introductions are where you get to meet the author. Introductions are where you get to get a window into the nature of the work. And introductions, sometimes you learn a lot more about the particular work from the introduction than you do from the body of the work itself. And, you know, I'll give you just a simple example of this. You can't learn Mesilas Yesharim without learning the Hakdama. Because it's in the Hakdama that the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato, says, you are not going to find Chidushim in my Sefer. I'm not writing anything new. I'm not writing anything novel. I am just simply speaking about concepts that everyone knows, yet for some reason most of us seem to ignore. Furthermore, the Ramchal says that if you want Mesil Hashem to be an impactful experience, ultimately you have to learn it over and over and over. If you go through Mesilas Yesharim without understanding those two concepts, so you can learn beautiful things from the Sefer, but there's so much that you end up missing out. So we're going to see with Perek Shira, the Hakdama is going to set the table for us. But more importantly, for our purposes today, is that the Hakdama, the introduction, is going to give us some clues as to the authorship of Perek Shira. So let's begin with number one on your sheet. Here I gave you, you have the entire Hakdama, the entire introduction here. We're not going to do the entire introduction, but I just want to set the table for this limud. Look what he writes in number one. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omar, also just to understand, Perek Shira is part of the body of Torah that we call Medrash. Perek Shira is a Medrash. It happens to be, because it's a self-contained work, it gets its own name, but it's part of the body of rabbinic literature that we call Medrash. So Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer. Now get ready for this. Kol ha'osek beperek Shira zeh b'chol yom. Whoever goes ahead and learns this Perek Shira every single day, Meyid ani alav shehu ben olam haba. So it's worth it just to learn it for this, right? Sir Rabbi Eliezer says, I can tell you, if you learn Perek Shira every single day, you are going to Olam Haba. You have a portion in the world to come. Now, let me caution you about this. Because the Chazal, right, Gemara, is filled with statements like this. For example, the Gemara Maseches Bracha says, Kala Omer Tehila LeDavid Gimel Pamim B'chol Yom, Muftach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba. Whoever says Ashrei three times a day, you're going to Olam Haba. So the Ritva, one of the early commentaries on the Gemara, says, really? That's it? That's it. Ashrei three times a day, I think most of us can handle that. Right? No problem. So the Ritva says, whenever you see Chazal say something like a statement like this, if you do X, if you do Y, if you do this, you're going to Olam Haba, what it means is, this is a very important thing, which in conjunction with other important things, paves the way to a licht gagan Eden. But again, Chazal never mean that this thing and nothing else. Remember again, this is a very important message in Yiddishkeit. All mitzvos are important. Mitzvos d'oraisa, mitzvos d'rabbanan, biblical commandments, rabbinic commandments, it's all important, and it's all part of that beautiful spiritual panorama that is called Judaism, and you need it all. You need it all. So when Rabbi Eliezer says, whoever says Perek Shira every single day, Meyid ani alav shehu ben olam haba, it means that it's something very important. It means that contained within this medrash are messages which are absolutely necessary and crucial to securing a place in the afterlife. V'nitzol mipegara. A person is saved from calamities. Umi Yetzer Hara. And you can be saved from the Yetzer Hara. Umi Din Kasha, difficult judgment. Umi Satan, and from the Satan. Umi Komini Mashchis Umazikin. And from all types of evil and destruction. So this I want to point out is the opening line of Perek Shira, which already tells us that this is not just a medrash, that this is not just something nice, but there is an incredible power to these words and an incredible power to this message. Because remember, even if we want to understand that Rabbi Eliezer, maybe it is a bit hyperbolic, maybe it is, but even if it's a bit hyperbolic, it's clear that what Rabbi Eliezer is highlighting is that there's an importance in these words. Skip to number two. I'm a Rabbi. Rabbi, the great Rabbi Huda Nasi, the codifier of the Mishnah, says, Kala osek beperek shira ba'olam hazeh, whoever learns perek shira in this world, Zoche Lilmod, excuse me, Ule Lamed, Velishmor Velasos. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Barakat Adonai, Lahinu Melech Olam Shakom Yebidvaro. Thank you. So Rebbe says, Kala Osik Beperek Shira Ba'olam Hazeh. Whoever learns Perek Shira in this world, Zoche Lilmod, Ule Lamed, Lishmor Velasos, Ule Kaye. Wow. What a statement. Whoever learns Perek Shira in this world will be privileged to learn Torah, will be privileged to teach Torah, will be privileged to perform acts of Torah and to fulfill mitzvos. V'talmudo miskayim biyado. And you will be able to retain your learning. V'nitzol miyetzahara. You are saved from the evil inclination. Again, I'm not going to get into the explanations of everything over here. Mipegara. Again, from all harm, chibut hakever, dino shel gehenom, chevlo shel mashiach, umarich yomim, and it is the secret to longevity, v'zocheh limos hamashiach ulechaye ha'olam haba. And you will be privileged to have a front row seat in messianic redemption and in the world to come. So again, to condense it, I'm sorry?
He guarantees it.
So again, to kind of summarize, Perek Shira is good. Perek Shira is good. That's the take-home message. And obviously, it has exceptional importance. But I want to begin to draw your attention now. It says one more, number three. Tanya, I'm a Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Kala Omer Shira Zu Ba'olam Azeh, whoever says Perek Shira in this world, Zoche Va'omra Li Olam Haba, will be privileged to say it in the world to come. Shene Emar Az Yashir Moshe, Sharlo Ne'emar Eli. Yashir, fine. Number four. So far, one, two, and three are all extolling the incredible power and the incredible profundity of Perek Shira. One thing is clear, which is even if we don't take all of these statements literally, because remember again, whenever you're dealing in Medrash, Medrash by definition at times is designed to be hyperbolic in order to go ahead and make a point. So even if there is some level of hyperbole associated with these particular rabbinic statements, the message is clear, which is Perek Shira has messages which are necessary for meaningful and impactful living in this world, and ultimately the true impact of Perek Shira is felt not only during our 120 years in this world, but even in the world to come as well. Number four. Number four begins to get into the discussion regarding attribution. So watch this. This is a medrash in the medrash. Amar Rabbi Sein Zichron Livracha. Al David Melech Yisrael Alav Shalom. Listen to this. David HaMelech. B'shash HaSiyim Sefer Tehillim. When David HaMelech finished Sefer Tehillim, Zocha Daito Alav means he got a little carried away with himself. David HaMelech was very proud of his accomplishment and was very proud of his accomplishment. He thought that Mamashiach, he had accomplished something. Yeah, the English over here is, he had a feeling of self-satisfaction. Right? But again, Zocha usually is a feeling of real accomplishment. So what happens? So the Medrash says, I'm on the front of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So David says, Ribono Shel Olam, Yesh Bria Shebarasa Ba'olam Cha Sha'omeres Shiros V'Sishbachos Yoser Mimeni. So Adonai says, Yibon Shalom, tell me, do you have any creation in this world who has said, who has sang as many songs and praises to you as I have? What David HaMelech is saying is, Yibon Shalom, and again, I want to be clear, this is not Gaiva, this is David HaMelech. You know, I want to point something very important out, which is, people think, we know, that a very important midah that a Jew has to possess is humility. Humility doesn't mean thinking that you're a nothing. Thinking that you're a nothing is what? That's low self-esteem, right? That's not humility. That's actually a real problem. That's low self-esteem. Humility means, I know what I have accomplished, but because I have accomplished X, I also know I could be accomplishing so much more. So I am humbled by the reality that I'm not even scraping the surface of my potential. And the proof that I have potential is, look at what I've done. So David HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, I think that out of all your creations throughout all of time, no one has ever sung to you as much as I have. And no one has ever composed such beautiful melodic songs as I have. Ribono Shel Olam, am I right? Right? Do I have a point here? So it's Kadosh Baruch Hu say. Okay, so Ribono Shel Olam doesn't respond at all. That's the amazing part of this base medrash. I'm sorry. Ba'osa Shah nizdam nelot svardeya achas. Listen to this medrash. So in this moment, while David is talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a frog. There's a frog that's there. And what happens? Va'amru lo David. Al tazuach daitcha alecha. The frog tells David HaMelech, David, don't get so carried away with yourself. Don't get so carried away. Sha'ani omeres shiros v'sishbachos yoser mimecha. The frog says, David HaMelech, I sing more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than you do. I've composed more beautiful songs than you do. And whereas you sing at intervals, I sing all of the time. V'lo'od, Ela kol shira sh'ani omeres, mamshales ani aleha, shloshes alafim mashalim. Not only that, says the frog, but for every song that I sing, I also compose 3,000 parables to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, we're going to talk about the frog. We'll see what this means later on. Shenemar, v'aydabrish, fine. V'lo'od, listen to this. Not only that, Ela sha'ani osekes b'mitzvah gidola. The frog says, furthermore, David, number one, I'm a better singer than you. I'm a more prolific singer than you. You compose songs. Remember, again, David HaMelech didn't really compose the mashalim. Shlomo was more known. His son was more known for the mashal. The frog says, I compose mashalim, parables as well. Not only that, but I engage in a very big mitzvah. What's my mitzvah? V'zohi ha-mitzvah shani osekes ba. What's the mitzvah that I engage in? Listen to this. Yesh b'svas hayam min echad. She'ein parnoso ki'im min hamayim. There's a certain species that lives in the water. The translation over here is, there's a species on the beach whose sustenance comes exclusively from creatures that live in the water. And what happens? U'bishosh hu ro'ev, and when this particular creature is hungry, notleni v'ochleni. This creature takes me, grabs me, and eats me. And the frog says, I allow myself to be consumed by this creature, because without me, this creature would not have further sustenance. Zohi mitzvah. And that is the mitzvah, says the frog, that I do. L'kai mashe ne'emar, im ra'if son acha. Turn the page. Hechilu lechem, v'im sameh hashkeu mayim, ki gecholim ata chota al rosho, v'ashem yishalim lach. Fine. So this is the conversation between David HaMelech and the frog. And we're going to see, by the way, even just from this, there is so much profundity. Because mankind, man, human being, we often think that we're the center of the universe, right? Everything happens around me. And what's important is happening in my life. And there is a whole universe that unfolds all around us, that is accomplishing things in every single moment. David HaMelech thinks that he has become the king of Shira, and is put in his place by a frog. The frog who tells him, I sing more than you, I compose mashalim more than you, and not only that, says the frog, I perform the ultimate self-sacrifice. I give myself up for something else in the natural world. Because without my self-sacrifice, the cycle of nature is broken. We'll come back to the frog in just a little bit. But the reason I'm bringing this down is as follows. Because what I'd like to try... So now, what we've seen from here is the profundity and power of Perek Shira. What I'd like to draw your attention to for a moment is a fascinating historical debate. Who wrote Perek Shira? So interestingly enough, based on number four, based on this exchange between the frog and David HaMelech, many explain that David HaMelech wrote Perek Shira. Because what David HaMelech realizes is that, wow, I thought I was the singer. I thought I was the one who was singing Shira of Vishishbachos. And what did the frog teach me? That the natural world sings to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So David HaMelech takes it upon himself to figure out the song of the universe. What is the song of the natural world? I know the human being song. Because remember, again, as we've seen throughout our years of studying Sefer Tehillim, David HaMelech's songs, David HaMelech's Tehillim, capture the entirety of the human condition. Anything and everything, from the greatest simcha to the most heartbreaking tzara, all of it is captured in David HaMelech's beautiful, overwhelming, and profound words. From the frog, he realizes it's not only man who sings. Everything in this universe sings Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it sings Shira, how it sings Shira, the topic of that Shira, that David HaMelech sets out to try to understand. So that's why many go ahead and attribute this Perek Shira to David HaMelech. Now along those lines, by the way, we'll come back to the authorship in just a moment, but we have to spend a few moments speaking about the power of Shira. Because Shira is something that is very central within Yiddishkeit. For example, we see Shira already very early on in Bereishis. Where do we see Shira in Bereishis? It's not explicitly in the text. It's mentioned in Rashi. Just in a few weeks from now, when we read about the struggle of Yaakov Avinu with the Ish, with the strange man who Rashi identifies as Saro Shal Esav, the ministering angel of Esav, so Vayavek Ishimo Adalos HaShachar. They're fighting until dawn, and what does the Malach, what does the angel, what does the Ish say to Yaakov? Shalchini ki Allah HaShachar, let me go. The sun is rising. So Rashi says, what does it matter if the sun is rising or not? The angels are not on the clock. What do you mean the sun's rising? So what does Rashi HaKadosh say? Higia zmani lomar shira. I have to go because today is my turn to say shira. So the malachim are saying shira, man is saying shira, animals are saying shira. What's the power of shira? See, if we understand that David HaMelech is the author of Perek Shira, David HaMelech has already taught us the profundity of Shira. Where did he teach it to us? Already in Tehillim. Take a look at number 5. David HaMelech says, at the end of Kapitel Lamed, which is the Kapitel of Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid, so at the end of that Kapitel, what does David HaMelech say? Leman Izamercha Kavod V'lo Yidom Hashem Elokai Li'olam Odeka. David HaMelech says, Yibono Shel Olam, I will sing to you forever. I will sing to you forever. So if you remember again, we studied this pasuk about 3 years ago. Do you remember?
Four
years ago. Okay, good. I shouldn't argue with Mrs. Gross. She knows. 4 years ago. Right? So if you remember again, the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mezrich, had an incredible insight on this. Because David HaMelech uses a word that we've seen before, Yidom. Where else have we seen that word? Vayidom Aaron. After Aaron endures the tragic loss of his sons, Nadav and Avihu, on the day that the Mishkan is consecrated, the Yom HaShmini, the eighth day of consecration, a day that was supposed to be a day of incredible simcha, Nadav and Avihu are killed, for whatever the reason, in the course of the service in the Mishkan, the Torah records Aaron HaKohen's reaction. Bless you. Vayidom Aaron. Aaron is silent. Aaron is silent. And Chazal extol Aaron's silence. Because what does that silence represent?
Acceptance.
It is acceptance. By the way, not resignation. Resignation and acceptance are two different things. Resignation means, I resign myself to this because I don't have a choice. Acceptance means, I accept that this is the Ratzon Hashem. I accept that this is the will of God. And therefore, if it's the will of God, by definition, it must be part of something bigger that is beyond my comprehension. Vayidom Aaron and Chazal extol Aaron's incredibly powerful, yet stoic response. There's a whole machlokes hamafarshim, there's a whole dispute among the commentaries. Did Aaron cry or not? So the Ramban and others say, of course he cried. Vayidom Aaron means after he cried, he didn't question. He accepted. Others explain, no, he didn't even cry. I'm sure he cried, based on maybe not in the public eye. Vayidom Aaron, the public face of Aaron, accepts the Ratzon Hashem. This is the will of God, and I accept, not resign myself to it. I absolutely, with a full heart, accept it. David HaMelech comes along and he says, Aaron, that was great, but I'm going to do something even better. Because you accepted the Ratzon Hashem in silence. I accept the Ratzon Hashem and still find the power to sing. Leman izamercha kavod velo yidom. Ribono shel olam. I have been through it all. For those who are joining our class, the Tehillim veterans already know this. Right? David HaMelech has been through every single life adversity. You name it, he's endured it. He's endured sickness. He has endured shalom bayis problems, and that's putting it mildly. He's endured the loss of a child. He has endured, again, certain missteps that allowed others to go ahead and categorize him as a chronic sinner. David HaMelech is the subject of ongoing, unrelenting lashon hara. Remember again, we saw the medrash that says that when David walked into the base medrash, the first question they would always ask him was what? Somebody's got to remember this. What's the halacha with someone who commits adultery? Does someone who has relations with a married woman, does he have a chegel olam haba? They were taunting him. They were taunting him over the episode with Bathsheba. It wasn't enough that he lost his shalom bayis. It wasn't enough that he lost the first baby with Bathsheba. They taunted him. David HaMelech says, I face internal enemies. I face external enemies. His own son Avshalom rebelled against him. He's on his deathbed and another kid is rebelling. You think you have problems with your children. David HaMelech, it's unspeakable. It's unspeakable. And David HaMelech says, I have endured everything. But do you know what my crown jewel accomplishment is? I've never stopped singing. No matter how bad it has gotten. Sometimes it's an upbeat tune. Sometimes it's a dirge. Sometimes it's besimcha. Sometimes it's through tears. But I'm always singing. Aaron, you're my role model. You taught me about how to accept the Ratzon Hashem. But I'm going to build on the foundation that you created. And instead of just accepting in silence, I accept with song. I accept with Shira. So when you understand that this was David HaMelech, then it turns out that what is Shira? What does it mean? L'mayin zamercha kavod v'lo yidom. David HaMelech is saying is you have to go through life with a sense of hope and a sense of optimism. Shira is the verbal or melodic manifestation or embodiment of hope, of optimism, of the belief that life can be great, even if it's not so great right now. That's Shira, the melodic embodiment of the hope of the Jew, of the optimism of the Jew, of the belief that somehow, some way, things are going to be great. Maybe not great the way I thought, maybe not as great as the way that I thought, maybe it's not going to look like anything that I planned for myself, but some way, somehow, life is going to be beautiful. And so David HaMelech, and again, we'll have to see how to plug this definition into Perek Shira, but what's amazing is, when David HaMelech finishes his own Shiros, right, when he finishes Kapitel Kuf Nun in Tehillim, and he closes the book, and he thinks mamish like he has sung more than anyone else, what does he discover? He discovered that there is a whole world of Shira that he never knew existed. And there's a whole world of Shira, even though there's incredible sacrifice. Remember again, who's giving him the Musar? Who gives David HaMelech Musar? First of all, it's also very humbling. You know, by the way, you know, most of us do not react well to constructive criticism, right? And most of us do not react well to feedback. You know, I just want to tell you, I love you, I just want to tell you. Most of us, even if we smile, we say, what a jerk, right? When the person turns away, who are you? You know, why don't you clean up your own life before you start telling anything to me? You want to see the humility of David HaMelech? Is that he takes it from a frog. He takes it from a frog. And not only does he take it from a frog, but right when he thought, okay, what was that? What was David HaMelech going to go ahead and do when he finished Sefer Tehillim? What's next? I would think like a townhouse in Century Village or something. You know, he's going to go down, he's going to relax. You know, you've earned it. You've earned it. No, he suddenly now discovers that what? There's a whole world of Shira that I didn't even know. And not only that, there's a whole world of Shira that's sung by creatures like the frog. And the frog tells David HaMelech, I want to tell you about what Mesiras Nefesh is. Mesiras Nefesh is me standing at the shore, knowing that I'm going to be eaten by whatever this creature is. We'll discuss which creature it is that's going to eat me, because if it doesn't eat me, it can't sustain. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs that creature, and needs me for this, doesn't need me for this, and I allow myself to be eaten. And even though I know I'm going to get eaten, even though I know that I'm going to live a life of self-sacrifice, I, the frog, sing. Not only do I sing, I compose. Mashal David HaMelech says, wow. I thought I knew what Mesiras Nefesh meant. I thought I knew what self-sacrifice meant. I'm the one who said, L'mayin zamercha kavod v'lo yidom, that I keep singing. The frog has just taught me what self-sacrifice means. The frog has just taught me what it means to live beyond yourself and to live for the collective, to live for the group. I have to write the whole new book of Shira now, because this is, Tehillim was great. But Perek Shira, the Shira of the universe, the Shira of self-sacrifice, the ability to keep singing, even though you know you have to stand on the beach and get swallowed up by another animal. I'm not suggesting that, you understand? But I'm just pointing out that David HaMelech sees in the frog the ability to sing even in the midst of incredible self-sacrifice. That's David HaMelech. But if you take a look at number 6, there's another element of Shira. The other element of Shira is as follows. If you take a look at, so look at number 6, this is from Az Yashir. You know, in general, the major question when it comes to Az Yashir is why Klal Yisrael only sang Shira. So, why Klal Yisrael only sang Shira by Yam Suf? In other words, this is a famous question that's asked by the commentaries. We should have really sung Shira when? Right when we left Egypt. Why are we waiting until the split? Meaning, remember again, the splitting of the sea was an incredible miracle, and clearly was the end of the Egyptians. But Klal Yisrael saw Makos, they saw the most powerful human ruler on the face of the earth let them go because he had no choice. Why didn't they sing Shira then? So I want to show you something amazing. The pasuk says, "Beruach ha'pecha ne'er mumayim, nitzvu kamo neid nozlim kafutamos v'yalav yam." So literally translated, with the breath of your nostrils, the waters were heaped up. So the imagery is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost kiviyachal like exhales through his nostrils. Obviously this is anthropomorphic. Exhales through his nostrils, and as a result of the strong divine exhale, the waters split. Or maybe he inhales, he exhales and it splits. What's interesting, and the Sefer Mesorah points out, is that apecha means nose. But apecha could also mean what?
Anger.
Anger. Uberuach apecha, libono shel olam, you split the sea with anger. Why? Why did Hashem Baruch Hu be angry? He's angry at the Egyptians, he's angry at us, angry at the sea. So look at number 7. The great tzaddik Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhin, whose yartzeit was just on Dalet Cheshvan, writes as follows. He says, Ele hisbir Rabbi Yisrael me Rizhin, shekasav, vayashav hayam lifnos boker leisan, ovdashu chazal tina'o, perish. Get ready for this. Kishenivra hayam, hisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu imoshiye alav, ipam, lishanos estivo. Remember again, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and this is very apropos, because we just read Bereishis a little while ago, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a natural order to the world. Creates a natural order to the world. We call it nature. Nature doesn't mean the absence of God. Nature just means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a system of rules through which the universe, through which the world runs. Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu change them? Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu overturn them? Of course he can. Does he? It would appear that more often than not, he does not. He allowed those rules of nature to continue as HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed them. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the sea. He said to the sea, listen, here's the way it's going to work. You're going to flow this way, you're going to flow that way, your current's going to go like this. And he gave the sea the properties. But at the time of creation, he tells the water, he tells the sea, that there is going to be a moment when I'm going to need you to do something unnatural, and I'm going to need you to split. This splitting of the sea was already pre-programmed into nature, and it was part of the agreement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with the water. At a certain point in time, I need you to split. Okay. Herayam. So what happens? So, lifnos es Yisrael, lifnos haderach l'mnei Yisrael. V'lachzor l'msalo, heru l'ayam, eifo es nishmos Yisrael v'amrlo, kishi yavo elu l'fanecha, tifnas haderach. So says the Medrash, the Rishon is quoting the Medrash. So the Medrash says, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He shows the sea a picture of Klal Yisrael. And he says, you see these guys? You see this group? When you see this group, that's when you know it's time to split. It's going to be a couple thousand years from now, but when you see this group, that's when you need to split. Okay, everything is fine. Listen to this. So when we left Egypt and we came to the sea, Hayotzim Mitzrayim, v'nishmoseim achulos mikoshi ashibut, v'gufoseim achulim avaka avoda, sarav hayam lihibaka lifnehem. Here's what happens, says the Medrash. Klal Yisrael comes to the sea. And what happens? The sea refuses to split. Why not? Ta'an. Loes eile hitzigu lefanai b'shashin evresi, ele neshamos mi'iros kishamesh. The sea says, you see these guys? I'm not splitting for them. Ribosham, that's not the picture you showed me. You showed me a picture of tzaddikim. You showed me a picture of righteous people. You showed me a picture of people who possess such purity of soul, such purity of heart. You see these people? They're broken, they're not nice, they're even carrying idolatry with them as we did through the sea, and difficult to understand. So the sea refuses to split. He says, that's not the deal. I agree to split for tzaddikim, not to split for these people. And therefore what happens? Lochin hayotzorech la'achricho sheibakeh bifneihem. Therefore says the Rishon of something so beautiful. That's why the Torah uses the Lashon of uveruach apecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry with the sea. And he says to the sea, fine, if you're not going to split, no problem. I'll split you myself. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu kibyochol gets angry at the sea because the sea refuses to split and he splits the sea himself. What's the machlokis? What's the debate between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the sea? So the sea is judging us by who we are. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees us for what we can be. The world sees us for what we are. The sea sees us for what we are. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to look into our soul and is able to see us not in a broken, compromised, spiritually disheveled state, but is able to see us for the holiness, for the purity that we possess, and we have the ability to actualize. You see, in the Ribono Shel Olam's eye, in his mind, the picture that he showed the sea at the time of creation and the picture of the people standing at the banks of the sea were exactly the same. It's just as Shmuel HaNavi is, right? As HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Shmuel, right? Adam yira le'inayim. Man, the natural world, is only able to see what's in front of them. Vashem yira le'lev. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees what's inside. And says the Rishoner, That's why we sing Shira at the sea and not when we left Egypt. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced the sea to split, what he was telling us is, I believe in you. What he's telling us is, I see your potential. What he's telling us is, you may not see your greatness. The sea doesn't see your greatness. Maybe no one sees your greatness. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I see your greatness. I see what you're capable of. I see the incredible spiritual beauty you possess. I see you not only for who you are, but more importantly, I see you for who you can be. That's Shira. Shira is the song. Shira is the song that is sung when? When you realize that you need not define yourself simply by who you are, but you have to find the koach to begin to discover who you can be. You see, so many of us go through life. We go through life and we assume that the people we are is the people who we will be. This is the way I was yesterday, and for some of us, this is the way I was 30 years ago. Love it or leave it, right? This is what I am. This is who I am. That's it. And you know why people do that? You know, deep down, you know why people do that? Because, not just, yes, it is easy, but because they're scared. Because it's scary to dig down deep inside yourself and to find your potential. Because I could give you a money-back guarantee that when you look deep inside, you're going to find a raging sea, a raging river of potential that is bubbling and yearning to come up and be actualized. See, if I ignore it and I pretend like it doesn't exist, I could just be ordinary, go through my life, be very happy, and be fine. But the moment I look inward and I discover it, then I have to answer myself the difficult question, which is, why am I not actualizing it? What's Shira? Shira is the melodic manifestation, the melodic moment when you discover that you have greatness inside of you. Perek Shira is going to be the incredible medrash that teaches us that there is greatness in everything. There's greatness in man. There's greatness in the animal kingdom. There's greatness in the animate, and there's greatness in the inanimate objects. There's greatness in everything in this universe. And of course, I'll give you a spoil, a little bit of the ending, because you know the whole point of Perek Shira. The whole point of Perek Shira is that when you begin to see the greatness in all of nature, so what's the greatest take-home message of that? If that's the greatness of nature, which doesn't really have Bechira, which doesn't have free choice, which doesn't have destiny the way that we have destiny, if that's the greatness of the frog, then oh my gosh, what I can become. Then oh my gosh, what I could do. Who knows what I could accomplish. Shira is the moment that you discover that you really have boundless potential. Shira is the moment when you discover that saying to yourself, you could be whatever you want to be, is not just a nice thing that your mother said to you before she tucked you into bed at night, but it's actually true. Now again, it's true within a framework, right? It's true within real things. If I want to be a professional basketball player, that might not be within my stars. But with real things, with ruchni things, I can be whatever I want to be. That's Shira. The moment you discover that you have the ability to be not just what you are, but you have the ability to be something magnificently great. And with this, I'll tie you into the last part of the shir. Because we spoke about David HaMelech being one of the authors. There is another opinion as to who one of the authors of Perek Shira is. A man by the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Now the truth is, it's not surprising, because if you remember again, in number 1 and number 3, we have two statements by a man by the name of Rabbi Eliezer. So some identify that the author of Perek Shira is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. If that name sounds familiar, it's because we learn about him in a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is not mentioned that much, but I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 8. Chamisha Talmidim Hayilo Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had 5 disciples. Now the truth is, of course, he had many more than 5 disciples. It means he had 5 primary Talmidim. Who were they? The Eluhain. So, just skipping. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is one of them. Who Hayamono Shvachan. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai used to go ahead and discuss the praise of his Talmidim. What did he say about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus? Bor Sud She'eno Ma'abe Tipa. He was a cemented cistern who never lost the drop. Which sounds like what? What is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai extolling? What is he extolling? His memory prowess, right? Any piece of information that came in never went out. So I'll tell you something that I always find exceptionally riveting is a lot of times when we learn about people, but we rarely learn about their stories. And the truth is, if you want to understand anyone in life, you have to understand their background, you have to understand their family. I want to show you the story of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And when you begin to understand his upbringing, you'll begin to understand the notion of Shira, and you'll begin to understand why it's quite possible that he, Dafka, was the author of Perek Shira. Take a look at number 9. See, here what I did feel over here is Rabbi Lau, in his commentary on Perek Avos Yachal Yisrael, there's a number of different midrashim and gemaras that talk about the youth, the younger years of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. So instead of giving you multiple sources, I just gave you one. Rabbi Lau compiles it all together. Watch this story. This is the story of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. 9 Aleph. Ben Esim Mushtaim Shana Haya, V'lo Lama Torah. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, or I should say Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, is 22 years old, and he has never learned a word of Torah. Now again, we already know from his family, we see something very interesting. His father's name is Hyrcanus, which obviously, as they say, is, it's not a Yiddish nomen. I'm saying this is not like, you know, this whoever this is, Hyrcanus is clearly an assimilated name. Now, does that mean his father was assimilated? His grandparents were assimilated? Clearly, he is not being brought up in a home of Torah. He's 22 years old and has never learned a word of Torah. Now, I'm going to show you, that's not hyperbole. He literally never learned a word of Torah. So what happens? His father actually was quite wealthy. Hyrcanus had a lot of land, a lot of real estate. So young Eliezer, from a young age, was out in the fields working the land. One time he says to his father, Torah lifnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So he says, father, now what prompted this? What motivated him? I don't know. The Medrash doesn't tell us. But one day he wakes up, he says, father, thank you for all the opportunities in real estate. I'm done with this. I want to go to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gadol Hadar, and I want to go learn Torah by him. What does his father say? Amar lo Aviv Hyrcanus, Iyata toim achetachrosh mali ma'ano. So his father said, his father doesn't even respond. His father essentially says, get back to work or you're not getting dinner. Get back to work. Just get back. This is not even a discussion. I'm not even going to dignify that with a response. You're a farmhand. Get back to work. Paragraph base. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar is super. Ki be'echad yom ha'matzu aviv bocha. So in this second version of the story, his father finds young Eliezer crying. 22 year old Eliezer crying. So he says, what's wrong? See, he figured what was wrong was that Eliezer had to work a particularly rocky piece of soil. So he felt that he was upset that he got such a hard job. So I said, don't get upset. I'll transfer you to a different lot of land and you'll work that. So paragraph Gimel, he finds his son still crying. Ama velama atabocha achshav. Why are you crying now? His father asks him. Hey Shiva ben ani rotze lilmod Torah. Father, I just want to learn Torah. Bitel abeves harayim mikol v'kol. Listen to these words that his father said to him. Va'amar lo, begil ko mevugar taschil lilmod Torah. So father says, parents, the father says to him the worst thing that a parent could ever do to a child, which is to tell your child you can't do something, to tell your child you can't accomplish something. So his father says to him, you're too old. You're 22 years old. That ship has sailed. You're an Ama Aretz, but here's good news. You have a good head for real estate, right? You're good with the land. Focus on what you're good at and get these ridiculous dreams of Torah out of your mind. Himshich Eliezer ba'avodaso, ad she nishpura regal paraso. So then what happens? So he goes back to work. He's a dutiful son. He goes back to work. And then the ox that he was working with broke its leg. He saw this as a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it's no longer time for him to work the field, but he has to go learn Torah. Was it a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Maybe yes, maybe no. You know, a lot of life is taking events that occur to you and trying to figure out what the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And sometimes you get the right message, and sometimes you intuit a dramatically wrong message. Was HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him it's time to go now or not? Who knows? The point is, he intuited. He understood that this was the sign. So what happens? He runs away from home. Take a look at number letter Dalet. Kasher Higil Yerushalayim. So he runs away to Yerushalayim. Sidrulach San Yololun Yachan Rabbi Yoshua Chanai Rabbi Yosi Hakohen. So he finds good roommates. He gets a dira in Yerushalayim. Right? He gets an apartment. He finds good roommates. Rabbi Yoshua Ben Chanani Rabbi Yosi Hakohen. And what happens? Finally, he makes his way into the yeshiva of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This was his life dream, 22 years old, never learned the word of Torah. He goes into the Beis Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What happens? he sits in one shir, totally clueless. Second shir, totally clueless. Cannot follow for the life of him what is happening. So what happens? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai kishi yoshev yeshiva ubocha. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai finds him sitting in the corner of the Beis Medrash, and he's crying. Shalom, malach habani, madu ata bocha. Says Eliezer, right? What's wrong? He doesn't even know who he is. What's wrong, my son? Why are you crying? Heshiva Eliezer, eineni yodea klum. Says, I don't know anything. Now listen to this next part of the story. Hischil, the Gadol Hador, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hischil lelamdo kriyashma tfila ubirkas hamazon. He knew nothing. He knew, that's what I'm saying, nothing wasn't a hyperbole. He knew nothing. And the Gadol Hador sees how broken this young man is, but also sees with him a genuine desire to learn, a genuine desire to grow. So the Gadol Hador takes out of his time to teach this young man, Kriyashma Shmona Esrei Birkas HaMazon. Paragraph Hey. Ma'osa yom hechel Rabbi Eliezer lilma b'shkida atzuma v'lo shas libo lidog afilu tzrach v'abasisim. So ultimately, again, the Medrash then goes on that Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus finds his place in the Beis Medrash and he throws himself into learning in a way that he even neglects his own physical needs. Skip down a little bit. Paragraph Tess. Behem shech advarim super. Get ready for the halachah. So to make a long story short, Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus very quickly rises to the top of the yeshiva, establishes himself as an exceptional Talmud Chacham. And what happens? So just by the way, if you pause here, I just want to point out an incredibly dramatic theme that runs through almost all of our great people, which was? Almost none of them were great from birth. A lot of them weren't even FFBs, right? They weren't even from birth, right? You see this, by the way. You see this. Avram Avinu, Sarah Imenu. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know when Moshe Rabbeinu rises to greatness? You know when he finds his topless in life? What age? 80 years old. 80 years old. For the first 80 years of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he's a shepherd. He's a regular guy. He finds his tachlis at 80 years old. Rabbi Akiva, 40 years old. Okay, Eliezer ben Horkinus is a little bit younger, 22 years old. What would we say today? What would we say today about a 22-year-old who went ahead and never learned Torah? We'd write them off quicker than you could even say write them off. Right? Because again, you don't have education. Okay, you could be something. You know, you'll learn how to make a bracha. You'll go to some shirm or something. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus, I just want to point this out. And this is part of the whole theme as well. It doesn't make a difference how old you are. The moment you put your mind to finding your potential, you can do it. 22, 40, 80, there are even some later bloomers than Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Whenever you decide to dig within yourself and find that potential and sing your shira, you can do it. So look how the story ends. Paragraph test. Behem shechadvar mesupar. As the story goes on. Ki bein sayim isisu achi le'ezer. So let me tell you this a little bit outside. So what happens? Now, in the meantime, remember, Eliezer ben Horkinus has run away from home. Presumably, he's not really having contact with his family. So, he has brothers. His brothers convince his father that you have to write Eliezer out of the will. You know, Eliezer abandoned us. He shirked his domestic responsibilities or his business responsibilities. You should write him out of the will. So, look how the story unfolds. Horkinus shows up in the Beis Din HaGadol, in the High Court of Yerushalayim. Who's in charge of the High Court of Yerushalayim? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gadol Hador. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realizes that Rabbi Eliezer's father has now showed up, and he knows that he's here, because like when you enter your name on the docket, you discuss what you want to do. Horkinus, here, right, reason for visit, write my son out of my will. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees all of this, and so watch what happens. So look in paragraph Yud. Benko, v'ko, pana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Eliezer. So you have to understand this. So they're all sitting now in the Beis Din HaGadol. They're all sitting in the High Court. Remember, Horkinus, Rabbi Eliezer's father, is in the galley waiting for his turn to adjudicate this particular case. So remember, they're adjudicating multiple cases. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to his pupil, to Rabbi Eliezer, you know, I think the time has come now for you to deliver your first discourse. It's time for you. You've never given a shir in public. It's time for you to give your first public shir. Benko, Pino, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Eliezer, v'tziva alav, psach udrosh. Give a drasha. Give your shir. Amar lo in yachal iftoach. He says, Rabbi, I can't. I'm not ready for that. Dachak bo harav, paragraph yud, second line. Dachak bo harav, dachak bo chaverav. It's actually such a beautiful image. His Rebbe encouraged him. His friends encouraged him. At sha'amad v'pasach v'darash b'dvaram shelo shamasan ozen le'olam. Olam. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus delivers such a beautiful shir, saying words of Torah that the world had never heard before. Not only did he give a shir, but he delivered it in such a beautiful, not only delivered it in such a beautiful way, but apparently his own chidushim, his own insights, his own ideas, he gave over Torah, like the likes of which was never explicitly stated in this world. Called davar v'davar shiatzu mipiv, every word that came out of his mouth. Amad Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai araglav. Every single time he said something, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai stood up, v'nashko arosho, and he went over to kiss Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus on his head. On his head. So watch this. Of course, who's in the audience here? Paragraph Yud Aleph. Li'achar shesim haben es devarim. After Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus finishes his shir, kam Hyrcanus aviv vahoda. Hyrcanus stands up and he says, Rabosai, ani lo basi lakan ela lahadir es Eliezer b'ni menechasai. I'm going to tell you the truth. I came here to write my son out of my will. I came here to prohibit all of my possessions to him. However, achshav kol nechasai nisunin le'Eliezer b'ni. But now, I hereby proclaim that all of my property, my entire estate, is given over to my son Eliezer. What does Eliezer say? First time he's had contact with his father for who knows how long. And this exchange is so moving. Heshiv Rabbi Eliezer. Eliezer turns to his father and he says, Father, im chafetz ani bekarkos, if I want real estate, la Hashem ha'aretz imlo'o. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns it all anyway. Im bekesef v'zov chashka nafshi, at the end of the day, if I want gold and silver, li hakesev v'li hazav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns all the gold and all the silver anyway. Ela betora bilvad chashka nafshi. All I really ever wanted, Father, was Torah. And the Baal Shem Tov adds in a postscript here. And the Baal Shem Tov commenting on this Medrash says that Rabbi Eliezer must have said to his father, and all I ever really wanted was for you to believe in me. All I ever wanted was for you to go ahead and see the potential I possessed and see the goodness I possessed. And instead of saying, you can't, you can't, you can't, just tell me, you can, you can, you can. I never wanted your money. I never wanted your estate. I never wanted your gold and silver. All I wanted was your love. And all I ever wanted was your encouragement. So now you begin to put the pieces together. And Chazal tell us that the potential author of Perek Shira is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And now it begins to make sense. Because Perek Shira is all about the potential greatness that is in all of nature. You look around nature, and it looks very pretty. It looks very beautiful. But we don't see the incredible potential that is simmering beneath the surface. Do you know who is most qualified to write about potential? The man who had to find it on his own. The man who never received positive encouragement from his parents. The man who had his dreams and aspirations stifled by a parental inflexibility. No one better than Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus knows that you could look one way, but possess incredible koach beneath the surface. So if we bring this all together, what we come away with, and what this will conclude, what we come away with, is that number one, Perek Shira is important, and now we begin to understand why. Like the Hakdama was telling us, say Perek Shira, ticket olam haba. Say Perek Shira, beautiful olam haza. Say Perek Shira, you can fight the Yitzhar. And now we begin to understand why. Why do they have such strength? I want to just tell you something. Chazal don't say this anywhere else. No one says that if you learn Maseches Baba Kama, you're going to be able to fight the Yitzhara, you're going to have a chilek in olam haba. No one says that if you learn Pirkei Avos, life is going to be fantastic. But suddenly again, everyone, the Hakdama is saying that if you learn Perek Shira, look at these words. Meyed anishu ben olam haba, nig nitzo mi pegara, Yitzhara, midan mi baldin kasha, zocha lilmot, lilame, lishmar, valansos, why? Because think about who are the two potential authors. Again, it's either one or the other. But two of the possibilities, David HaMelech. David HaMelech teaches us to sing No matter what adversity we're facing in life, you know, the greatest challenge of the human condition is not to buckle or not to yield to the difficult circumstances in life, no matter how bad or overwhelming they may be. That when you find yourself cocooned in darkness because life is difficult, you have to believe that there will be light. That's David HaMelech. That's L'mayni Zamercha Kavod V'lo Yidom Hashem Elokai Li Olam Adeka. And David HaMelech thought that he was the only singer, but he realizes that nature has this same power as well. To continue singing, to continue with hope, to continue with optimism, no matter how difficult, even if you're the frog, and you know you have to get eaten by the larger creature, there's still the ability to sing. That's message number one. And imagine for a moment, if we build up the ability to sing, no matter what our life circumstances are, yeah, then you know what? That is an incredible gift. Then life in this world becomes significant, life in the next world becomes significant, and we open up the door to all types of accomplishment. Or maybe the authors of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. In which case, the entire essence of Perek Shira perhaps is a little bit different. And we'll see how both themes come out. But maybe the essence of Perek Shira is stopping to define ourselves by what we see, by what we presently are, and to begin defining ourselves by what we can be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't see us for just who we are. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks inside and sees us for who we can be. The rest of the world, even with each other, we see one another for who we are right now. Tarnished, broken, difficult, cranky, whatever. You could fill in as many adjectives as you want in there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees us for who we are. For what we can be. For who we can be. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus says, I want to tell you something. I grew up in a home that tried to tell me I couldn't be more. I grew up with a father. And again, I want to point out something. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus' father was not a bad man. I guarantee you he was not a bad man. You know that we all know, what's the difficulty with parenting? You learn on the job. And a lot of times you look back and you say, and any person who has, Baruch Hashem, blessed multiple children, and you look what you did with some of your older kids, you did with some of your younger kids, you say, I can't believe I did that to this one, and they're still normal. I can't believe I did that to that one, and they're semi-normal. Hyrcanus wasn't a bad man. Hyrcanus wasn't a bad man. He was a man who suffers from the condition that most people suffer from, which is tunnel vision. All you see is one way. All you see is one thing. Real estate, farming the land, that's what we know, that's what we do. Greatness, Torah, spirituality, it's not in our lexicon, it's not in our skill set. So unknowingly, he squashes his son's aspirations time after time after time. But there was something in Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus that says, even though my father tells me I can't be, even though my father tells me that I'm ordinary, even though my father tells me I cannot become the person I so desperately yearn to be, I believe in my heart I can. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is a self-made man. He's not great because his father was great. He's not great because his grandfather was great. He doesn't have a special pedigree. He didn't go to the elite yeshivas when he was little. He wasn't learning 27 hours a day from the time that he was 4.5 years old. None of that. None of that. But he was a man who consciously made the decision to go beneath the surface to find his potential. To stop defining himself by what he presently is. To look within himself and to try to see what he can become. And so what's the gift he gives to us? The gift he gives to us is Perek Shira. Because as we're going to see, Perek Shira ultimately is the Perek that says, you can look at the world one way, but when you pierce beneath the surface, you begin to see the potential, you begin to see the greatness, you begin to see the beauty. And if there's greatness, beauty, and potential in nature, then imagine the greatness, beauty, and potential which resides in us as well. All right, so we'll stop here for today, and then we'll begin Perek Aleph, Perek Shira next week. I don't know how to...